My name's Brent, and I'm really glad to see you today. We're in the series that we're calling Beyond, and so we're going to do some, you know, we like to start with these little interactive moments where you get to speak back to us. And today, I want to get to know you a little better, and maybe you'll get to know me too. And if you're online, I want you to be responding in that chat window, okay? So let us know what you think as well. But I want to know, what are your brand preferences? Okay, you know, this loaded question, right? So it's a COVID world, we know, and everybody has shift to work to home, work from home kind of thing. So here's a COVID one. The first one would just be simply this. Are you a Zoom or are you a Microsoft Teams? Okay, Zoom people, let's see it. Okay, Teams people. Oh, what'd you say back there, the real workers? Real world. Okay. Look at that. Throwing it down. You know, the funny one about this one is I put this in and Ryan was like, who uses Microsoft Teams? And I'm like everyone nowadays. It's like Zoom is old, Teams is new. You know, here's the original question, right? Coke or Pepsi? Oh, and let me qualify this. It can be the family. It can be the Coke family of products, you know. If you're Dr. Pepper, sorry, it doesn't belong to either family, so it's on its own. Coke, Sprite, Mellow Yellow, those kind of things. Pepsi, Diet Pepsi, whatever else, Mountain Dew. Sorry, let me see my Coke people.
Whatever's on sale.
Wow, and my Pepsi people. There's Scott Oswald. I knew Scott Oswald was there. Pepsi does not fare well with this crowd. Now, this one could lead to a fight, and I'm going to encourage you to sit in your seats and don't move, okay? Casey's or Come and Go, okay? Oh, no. How many of you say Casey's? Interesting. How many of you are Come and Go? Okay. How many of you say Casey's breakfast pizza? See, I knew that's where the fight could break out because it always comes down to that stinking breakfast pizza, right? And I have to admit, I don't get it, but okay, that's just me. Okay, here was one from when I was growing up, so this one dates me a little bit. So, Levi's or Wrangler? Oh, see? Now, the funny thing about, let's see first, Levi's, Wrangler. If Pastor Ryan was in the room, he's one step away from being a Wrangler person. I did ask him this morning when he walked in, I said, what jeans are you wearing? Just to be sure. He is only one step. You know, when I was growing up, Levi's were the jeans, button fly 501s, if that tells you, you know, 1980s, that was the huge thing, right? So here's another one. Go ahead and put it up. There you go. iPhone. Yeah, who did these slides? Where'd the iPhone people? You love Jesus, thank you. Other guy people? Cheap. Cheapskates. All I have to say, it's not what you prefer, it's what you should be using, maybe we should have said. So, that's a fun one. Here's another one. Walmart or Target? Walmart folks? There's my Southern contingent coming out right there. That's right. Bentonville, Arkansas, baby. Target? Wow, Target, Minneapolis. All right, representing. Here's a generational question right here. Facebook or Snapchat? Facebook, people? Snapchat? There we go. If you were over 30, you probably said Snap, or over 30, you probably said Facebook. Under 30, you probably said Snapchat. Now, here's one. You ready for this? Go ahead and put it to slide up. Jesus or Jesus? Oh, interesting, right? So on the left side of the screen, you've got the very Eurocentric Jesus that I'm sure is a very accurate representation of a Middle Eastern man with blonde hair and blue eyes. Or the right is a study, I think, Nat Geo or Smithsonian or History Channel one did, and they said, let's see if we can compile most likely what a Middle Eastern man born around the first century might look like based on the best evidence. And they came up with that right there on the right to say, realistically, that may be more what Jesus looked like. See a difference?
A little bit.
Little bit? Which Jesus did we grow up with? It's an interesting question, right? You see, the reason we go through this whole brand question thing is because there are companies that are paying big money to determine what you like, but not just determine what you like, but to kind of point you in the direction to get you to like the things they want you to like. So if you've never watched The Social Dilemma on Netflix, I highly recommend it. It's a frightening movie that talks about the algorithms that work behind the scenes to get you to scroll and click on things, how it's messing with your mind and really reprogramming us a little bit to point us directions to say, you should like these things. Now, growing up, because I'm, you know, approaching the big 5-0 in a few years, I grew up in a time where the media that was coming at us, it wasn't that much. We had channels. I remember the days before we had more than, you know, we only had 3 channels, you know, and I remember cable coming in, but you had TV commercials. Granted, you couldn't fast forward them through DVR like you could today, but you had commercials, you had newspaper, you had radio advertising, you had those crazy folks that bought ads in the back of your yearbook, but not that anybody ever looked at those. But realistically, that was about all you had. You didn't have all this bombardment, but today you've got so many more. The ads that you see before YouTube, the ads that Snapchat sends in there, and if you try to get the free version of Spotify, the ads that come there, even my podcast. I love podcasts. Leave my precious podcast alone. Stop putting advertising in there. I just want something good for free. Is that so wrong? Evidently, because now Apple's going to make you pay for that too. So, but we've seen, and now there's this new trend called influencers. Here's the question. Any of you watch influencers? Any of them see some? I have to admit, I heard about this a few years ago. It hadn't been too long, I guess. And I thought, what is this? Who's actually going to pay attention? And then I began to see the real power of influencers in one of my children making a college selection states away at an extremely expensive private university. Why? Because that's where some influencers went. And it just, wow. And so it's just very fascinating to me because we see brands all around us and these things pulling at us, these tentacles grabbing at us to like these things. And as I thought about this, I thought it's in our culture and in our world, it's very easy for Jesus to become just another brand. Like that last picture we showed, Jesus can become one of many options, many influencers in our life. There's a book called Faith for Exiles, authors David Kinnaman and Mark Matlock, and they introduced this idea of brand Jesus. And I love the idea. I thought, man, this is a powerful way to think about it, because what they talk about with brand Jesus is it's an image of Jesus that fits neatly into our current perspective. Doesn't challenge your thoughts or beliefs, doesn't challenge your lifestyle, and really doesn't ask too much of you. It's basically your brand Jesus is the Jesus that just agrees with you. And it basically, your faith becomes very me-centered. In fact, a me-centered life is very common. We hear it expressed in expressions all around us. Like my favorite that makes me want to punch myself in the face, you speak your truth. Or one, even as we were joking in the foyer this morning that came out, you do you. You know, all these expressions that Jesus is just kind of a, yes, I'm giving you my thumbs up, an influencer in our lives. And all we have to do is try to pick and choose the things that we like that Jesus is selling us, and we can leave the rest behind. But today, I want us to push back against that very self-focused, me-centric, speak my truth, what makes me happy, you know, look inside to become the best version of me I can be culture, and discover what it actually means to go beyond me. You see, we're in this series called Beyond, and we're trying to challenge us to say, what is it that we might be missing? When we buy into certain mentalities and cultural things or worldviews or whatever, are there things we might be actually missing in the process? And I contend today that if you and I buy into this culture that says, you do you, be your best version, speak your truth, that we're missing it. We're missing the Jesus that is actually Jesus. And we've bought into a version of Jesus that we just like because he just tells us we're okay. And that's what I want us to look at. Now, to be fair, the me-centric framework comes to us very naturally. Parents of toddlers, did you have to teach your kids to be selfish or focus only on themselves? No, really. And to be fair, it's not just toddlers, is it? Because somehow they carry that, as much as we try to get that out of them as toddlers, as elementary age kids, they stay there. And then God help us when they become teenagers, because it's still there then. And so we come by this very naturally. No one has to teach us. The world revolves around you. We just come out and assume it. It's like, yes, supposed to. This is how life should be. And as I thought about that, I thought, you know, it's kind of like the geocentrism. You guys familiar with that? It's this scientific idea that was for 1,000 years that the earth was the center of the universe and everything else orbited the earth. And you realize that that was the prevailing thought until the 1500s when Copernicus first challenged it. And then later, Galileo supported his findings. But because the church didn't like that idea, Galileo had to go up before the Roman Inquisition and defend himself. And he ended up pleading guilty to a lesser crime. But he was placed under house arrest indefinitely until he died. Because he challenged this. He challenged the idea from a scientific perspective that the earth is the center of the universe. And that's really how we approach our lives in a lot of ways. It's not the earth that we see as the center of the universe. We see me. Me, I am the center of the universe. Everyone, you all get to be involved in my orbit. Aren't you lucky? And even Jesus becomes just another thing circling my life. And we break everything down that way. And I know this isn't an easy conversation to have because I believe it's something we all struggle with, and it's reinforced by how we live and the way we see and an entire world that says, do it your way, have it your way. But with many of the things that Jesus said and did, he pushes back. He puts in, as I look at this, he really puts his thumb right on a pressure point in our culture and in our society to say, Jesus, people, if you're going to truly follow me, if you're truly going to have joy and peace in life, you can't be here. And it doesn't make sense. Because we assume that my greatest satisfaction and fulfillment would come when all you exist in my orbit. When you exist for my pleasure. When you exist to make me happy. Isn't that the way we would have the best and most fulfilled life? And Jesus says, no, it's not. In fact, Jesus says the way to a fulfilling and abundant life is to live beyond me. To live beyond me. In 3 of the 4 Gospels, we have a story, an interaction between Jesus and his disciples in a crowd, and they're following him around. And Jesus is beginning to tell them that he's going to die. And the disciples don't like this. They don't really get it, but they don't like it, so they begin to push back. But Jesus calls everyone around him and he says, hey, let me just tell you a few things. In fact, we're going to read Mark's version of this. It's Mark chapter 8, verse 31. Look at the screen as we read this. He, Jesus, then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and after 3 days rise again. He spoke plainly about this, and Peter took him aside. I love Peter. And began to rebuke him. You know, might as well go all out, right? When Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter, and he said, get behind me, Satan. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. Then he called the crowd to him along with the disciples, and he said, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. For what good is it for someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul? I went back a little more than I was going to originally because I find this whole interchange fascinating. Because we began with Jesus saying, I'm going to die, and Peter being like, Jesus, come here. No. Here's what we're going to do, Jesus. This is the Brent version, by the way. Hold on, Jesus. Let's talk about this. We've got momentum. Look at the crowds. They're for us. We've got everything we need to march right into the city, the capital, and take back our city, to take back our nation. We can do this. We can storm it, and we can win. And Jesus has to go, "Oh, poor Peter." Imagine this is what he says to Brett most of the time too. "Oh, poor Peter." And what a rebuke. "Get behind me, Satan. What you're concerned about is not what God is concerned about. What you're concerned about is what you want and your desires and your the world revolving around you and how it think you think the world needs to be. But you need to see something different." What's fascinating about this moment is one part we didn't read is you go back just one section in that passage and you find this is the moment where Jesus says, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter, by a direct message from God, says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And 2 seconds later, he's like, "No, let's go burn it down." How can you believe the right things and say the right things and still miss Jesus? That's the question we have to look at today. And he answers that for us as he brings the crowd and he begins to speak and he lays it out for them. It begins with that question, whose concerns do you have in mind? God's concern or your own? And then he begins to tell us how we shift the concerns. He talks to them about how we shift ourselves into line with the concerns of the kingdom of God, to live as the citizens that he wants us to live. And he lays out what a disciple looks like. And a disciple is not a word we use a lot except in church. And if you're not in church world, you might think that's a funny word. What does that mean? It's a student. It's a learner. But beyond that, it's not just someone who sits in a class and follows a teacher. In the first century, a rabbi, a teacher would often amass students to follow them. But it wasn't, "Hey, come for an hour-long class every day." When Jesus reached out to his disciples, he said, "Come, follow me." And they followed him for years. They went everywhere that they went. He went. They did what he did so that in the midst of life and just living out together, they learned what Jesus was all about. They didn't need a classroom, although he spoke a lot of times about truth and things like this. But what they saw was how they learned. And that's what we're talking about. And it wasn't just Jesus who did this. You can go back to the historical record. Rabbis having disciples that followed them was a very common practice. That's what happened. But Jesus said, "If you want to learn from me, don't just sit in a classroom. Come and follow me. Come and live as I live. Do the things that I do." And I imagine he said also, "And hang on, because this isn't going to be easy." Because Jesus looks and he says, the first thing, if you want to be my disciple, if you want to live like me, if you want to do what I do, he says it begins with this: deny yourself. Now, isn't that a popular message to bring in the crowds? Hey, got a great idea for us. We're just going to tell everybody, "Hey, come in and die to yourself. Renounce yourself. Forget yourself. Pay no attention to yourself." That's what Jesus is saying. Saying you have to put yourself down. And I'm not talking about in a self-esteem kind of beat yourself up. "Oh, I'm so worthless. I'm such a worm." Stop that. Do you know what it means to deny yourself? It means to understand enough about who you are and what God says about you that you don't have to prove yourself. I don't have anything to prove to anybody if I know what God says about me. And I don't have to build myself up because Jesus has already done it. So I can set myself down. I can denounce myself. I can renounce myself. I can deny myself and not have to worry about it because I know who I am and I know what Jesus has done for me. If we find people that feel like they can't deny themselves, they have to puff themselves up, I guarantee you it's because they don't understand who they are in Jesus Christ. Because there's nothing that I see in what Jesus says about me that convinces me I have to do something greater than he's done to prove my value and worth. He's already said it. He's already done it. And therefore, it frees me up to lay down my life. What I want, what I desire, how I think the world should be, how I engage with the world, all gets thrown out in order to make room for what God says, how Jesus lived, and how his kingdom is to be done and his priorities lived out. And before you think we've done all that, realize, as I said, we can do lip service to that idea, but it can't just be in one area. But I give up an hour on Sunday. I mean, I wake up, I get dressed and come to a building for an hour on Sunday. Isn't that enough? I mean, I get up out of bed, or I mean, I at least grab my laptop in bed and turn on Facebook to watch this. I mean, that's pretty good, right? No, Jesus cannot be our part-time influencer or your extracurricular activity. We can't say, I'm gonna step on toes, I'm just warning you. We can't say I'm about the justice and reconciliation of Jesus and then live the rest of your life the way you want to. It doesn't work that way. You cannot ignore the righteousness and holiness of God because I prefer the justice and reconciliation of God. And just like that, you can't switch those. You can't say, I don't care about justice and reconciliation. I'm going to be about truth and I'm going to hammer truth. No. Jesus is a whole package. It's not a grocery store or a buffet that we get to walk into and pick things off the shelf that we like. That's brand Jesus. And Jesus didn't go to the cross for you to have a Coke Jesus Light or Diet Jesus. It's more than that. Self-denial means a radical reorientation of our priorities, putting off our greed, our pride, our comfort, our security, our desire for revenge, our future plans, whatever it might be. Self-denial says, I lay down myself. At the core, who I am, Jesus becomes number one. Now, that's a pretty high bar. You agree with that?
Yeah.
Pretty high standard. And we'd be pretty okay maybe if Jesus just stopped right there, but he doesn't. He goes on and he says, take up your cross. Now, in the first century, this would not have been a mystery statement. For us, take up your cross means, well, sure, I'll go buy a necklace at the jewelry store and I'll wear my nice little gold necklace or my pendant or my bracelet, or hey, I might be a rebel and get that cross tattoo. Awesome. But to a first century audience, when he says take up your cross, they knew what they were talking about. He was talking about humiliation. He was talking about pain. He was talking about death. Remember, these are the guys that lived in a world where they would walk down the street that would be lined with crosses and people hanging on the crosses, insurrectionists, zealots who were against the government, and to keep the peace in that territory, they would arrest these people, beat them half to death, and then kill them on a cross. And you would see them as you traveled places just to be reminded if you were thinking about getting out of line. So when Jesus says to this crowd, take up your cross, they're not thinking, oh boy, I get jewelry. They're thinking, I'm going to die. This is something that could cost me my very life. What's fascinating is that Jesus had been amassing these crowds. And as he gets closer to his death and his crucifixion, he begins to lay it down very hard. And this message would have been one where they would have heard and had be struggling with it. He knew the time was coming to separate those that were following for fun and those that were following for real. And these are the things he would say. You need to understand what you're signing up for. The suffering, the struggle, death. Because it wouldn't be long from this moment where they would see Jesus literally pick up a cross and try to carry it outside the city. He was so battered and beaten that he couldn't even get there. They had to get somebody else to carry it. And they would see his arm stretched out so far it would pull the arms out of the socket. And they would see 9-inch spikes driven through his hands. And they would then see the vertical pole was already there. So then they would take that body and they would lift it up. Just imagine that for just a moment. By ropes, they would hoist that up. The weight of your body, nothing to support it except the two nails right there in the crossbar. And then they would slam you down on that spire, where they would wait till you suffocated and died. Let's don't fool ourselves into thinking that when Jesus says, take up your cross, it means anything less than suffering, pain, and death. Because that's what it cost Jesus. You see, Jesus is saying, pick up that cross. Most people would look at that and go, I don't want that. I don't want what that does. And we in Christians, we're really good. As I said, we like to wear our jewelry. I read somebody this week said this. It says, disciples must do more than survey the wondrous cross or glory in the cross or love the old rugged cross. Disciples must become like Jesus in obedience and live in the cross. Now, both of these right here would be enough. Die to yourself, take up your cross. That's a lot. But this isn't just referring to how you handle your money or how you raise your kids or how you view your job. The call is to die to self, to die completely to us. It's more than just the fruit. It's the inside. It's the internal stuff that's taking place. And he, as I said, these are the moments that begin to separate the real followers from just the fans. The last part of this is Jesus then says, follow me. I think for many of us, we want to jump to that part because that's the easy part, right? What's interesting is when you look at the Greek words, I didn't know this before I studied this passage, deny and take up. They're Greek verbs. They're aorist tense. It's kind of similar to our past tense. So basically, as you look at this passage, you have two past tense verbs and then a present tense verb that's kind of present and ongoing. But as you read this, what you discover is that if you haven't denied yourself, if you haven't taken up your cross, then you are not following Jesus. Let me say that again, just so we catch that. If you haven't denied yourself, if you haven't taken up your cross, then you're probably not following Jesus. Let's take probably out, then you're not. But you say, but I'm doing good things. I've got things going on. I'm standing up for right and all this. So what? You're following your own version of Jesus. You're following a Jesus that you have created because you didn't want to be challenged by the real Jesus. If we haven't done the first two, the third isn't happening. We're just following our own brand or version of Jesus. So what does it look like to follow Jesus? It's simply this. I said this before. It's beyond the classroom. It's beyond just head knowledge. You can confess the right things and still not be following Jesus. I mean, if we never get out of the classroom, how can you follow? You ever tried to walk in a school desk before? That's what it's like. It's impossible. You can't follow Jesus and stay in the classroom, period, the end. The classroom's not a bad place to be, but you just can't stay there. Following Jesus is living counterculturally. We need to define this in the church. It is not a culture war. Not everything that's done in the world is an affront to your faith. I need an amen on that one. Not everything that's done in this world is an affront to your faith. It doesn't need you to stand up and go to battle because the world is living as the world lives. Because Starbucks doesn't say Merry Christmas on their cups and they put Happy Holidays. Who cares? Move on. We're called to live counterculturally, and I don't care what Starbucks puts on their cups. It's not worth the battle if I'm not living as a person of Jesus every day of the week. Culture war is nothing more than getting stirred up about something so we look spiritual, and we're not. Because if we haven't denied ourselves, if we haven't taken up our cross, we're not following Jesus. We're just making a ruckus for no reason. So it's not a culture war. It's living counterculturally. It's taking care of the orphan and the widow. It is diving into justice. It's standing for truth. It's living a righteous life. It's all that together because that's what Jesus did, and he's calling us to live as he did. And it's more than do-goodism. We can't just move over and just say, well, it's all about good deeds. No, Jesus died for this. Jesus died for this. That's important. And Jesus knew that the most important thing we could ever address, yes, the physical needs are important, but the spiritual need is more important. And if we address the physical to get to the spiritual, then that's great. But we can't just forget the spiritual in the process. You see, the problem I think for many of us is in our country and in our church, we're very pulled. And we have a tendency, regardless of whether you're on the left or the right, you think God's on your side. You stand on that and you think, I've got it. And the problem with that is when you live there, you can't hear God. You just assume that you're right and that everything God's going to say to you is going to agree with you. And therefore, you shut the door of communication for God to speak to you about anything else. And we can't stay there. Jesus says, deny yourself, take up your cross, follow him. If all we hear from God is agreement, we got a problem. Because I don't know about you, but I know I still been doing this a long time. And I still need God, Jesus, the Holy Spirit, to speak into my life. And occasionally point out some things to me that I don't like to have pointed out. But if I sit in a position and I assume I'm right and God agrees with me, I'll never hear his voice. My prayer life, my Bible study, listening to the Holy Spirit, it'll never happen as long as I think I've got it. So I just simply end with this. In a world that says, indulge yourself, Jesus says, deny yourself. In a world that says, tell your truth, Jesus says, take up your cross. Or you do you, take up your cross. In a world that says, go your own way, Jesus says, follow me. So what are you going to do this week to make sure that you're not following your version of Jesus, but you're actually following the real Jesus?